Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is January 20th, 2016, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is That Smell of Isopropyl Alcohol for Nausea in the Emergency Department. And our guest skeptic today, Megan Groth. Megan is an emergency medicine pharmacy specialist at the University of Vermont Medical Center and an adjunct professor of pharmacy at the Albany College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences. She is also our favorite EM pharmacist. Welcome back to the SGEM, Megan.
Hey, Ken. Thanks for having me back on. Those are pretty big shoes to fill as a favorite EM pharmacist.
Well, you are our favorite. And the last time you were here, you were talking about IV antibiotics in the emergency department causing diarrhea.
Yep. I think the name of that episode was called Diarrhea. Hard to spell, but easy to smell.
Yeah, I think you're right. But now you're back talking about vomiting. I'm detecting a bit of a trend here, Megan.
What can I say? I have a fondness for both ends of the GI tract.
Ooh, well, why don't you give us a case to start this show with?
All right, sounds good. So you have a 34-year-old male who presents to your emergency department with complaints of severe nausea for the past 24 hours. He's vomited a number of times at home, and on a scale of 0 to 10, 10 being the worst nausea he's ever experienced, he rates his current nausea at an 8. As the triage nurse brings him back to get settled into his room, you observe him holding an emesis basin and dry heaving. He has no significant past medical history and no known drug allergies.
And nausea and vomiting, it's a very common complaint for patients presenting to the emergency department, accounting for almost 5 million, yes, 5 million visits in the U.S. each year.
So Ken, the anti-emetic treatments that we currently have available include ondansetron, droperidol, metoclopramide, promethazine, and prochlorperazine. Ondansetron is the most commonly administered medication in U.S. emergency departments. But despite this, it takes about 30 minutes for IV ondansetron to work, which is not ideal in patients on the verge of vomiting.
That is true. And there are studies showing commonly used antiemetic drugs are not superior to placebo in undifferentiated emergency department patients. And in fact, we covered one of those studies with Eve Purdy on SGEM number 101 called Puke, Antiemetics in Adult Emergency Department Patients.
So Ken, a number of studies have evaluated the use of isopropyl alcohol inhalation for nausea, but these have primarily been done in the postoperative setting. A recent Cochrane review found that isopropyl alcohol inhalation was more effective than placebo in reducing the number of subjects requiring rescue antiemetics, but not as effective as standard antiemetic therapy. We'll put this reference up in the show notes.
Yeah, and that Cochrane review by Hines et al., they also found that other aromatherapies like peppermint oil, it did not have any good evidence to support their use in treating postoperative nausea and vomiting. So Megan, what's the clinical question we're going to try to answer on today's podcast?
Does nasally inhaled isopropyl alcohol reduce nausea in adult emergency department patients?
Give us the reference.
So this was a study done by Beadle and colleagues titled Isopropyl Alcohol Nasal Inhalation for Nausea in the Emergency Department, a Randomized Controlled Trial. This was published in the Annals of Emergency Medicine late last year.
Let's go through the PICO. What was their population?
All right, so they looked at adult patients presenting to an urban tertiary care emergency department with a chief complaint of nausea or vomiting.
And they had a number of exclusions. They excluded patients with an allergy to isopropyl alcohol, were unable to inhale through their nares, if they were unable to read or write English, or had altered mental status, including intoxication. The other exclusions included patients who had received in the last 24 hours an antiemetic, including nasally inhaled isopropyl alcohol, or psychoactive drugs or medications known to potentially produce nausea when exposed to alcohol. Now for the eye of the PICO. The I is intervention. So what was the intervention?
They used a nasal inhalation of an isopropyl alcohol pad for no more than 60 seconds. They were instructed to sniff at study start. After 2 minutes. And after 4 minutes. Whew, I'm going to pass out. If nausea was relieved at any time, subjects were instructed to further inhale no more.
I love that you did that. And what they did was they compared it to nasal inhalation of pads saturated in sodium chloride or normal saline. So what was their primary outcome that they were looking for?
They measured nausea scores at 10 minutes post-treatment using an 11-point verbal numeric response scale.
And their secondary outcomes were?
Patient satisfaction scores on a Likert scale, pain verbal numeric response scale scores at 10 minutes post-intervention, and whether or not subjects received subsequent rescue antiemetics.
So the authors' conclusions were, quote, "We found that nasally inhaled isopropyl alcohol achieves increased nausea relief compared with placebo during a 10-minute period," end of quote. Well, Megan, let's run through those 11 quality checklists that we have for randomized clinical control trials. Ready to go?
I think I've caught my breath by now.
Okay, here we go. Question number one, the study population. Was it included or focused on those in the emergency department?
Yes, it was.
Did they randomize them adequately?
Yep.
Did they conceal the randomization?
Yes.
Were patients analyzed in the groups which they were randomized?
Yep.
How about the recruitment? Was it consecutive?
No, it was not. We'll talk about this in the discussion.
Okay, how about the patients in both groups? Were they similar with respect to prognostic factors?
Yes, they were.
How about blinding? Were all the participants and the patients, the clinicians, the outcome assessors, were they all unaware of their group allocation?
I'm unsure about this one, Ken.
Okay, question eight. All groups, were they treated equally except for the intervention?
Yes.
Did they follow them up completely?
Yes, they did.
And how about all patient-important outcomes? Were they considered?
Nope.
And the 11th and final question, the treatment effect, was it large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
I'm unsure.
All right, so let's go through those results. The key results were they had 80 patients enrolled in the study and underwent randomization, 37 in the treatment group and 43 in the control group. What was that primary outcome they were looking for?
So they found that the isopropyl alcohol arm had lower verbal numeric response scale nausea scores at 10 minutes than the placebo arm. The median score was 3 versus 6 on an 11-point scale.
All right, so this gave you an effect size of 3. So there was a difference of 3 on that 11-point scale between the isopropyl alcohol and the placebo, favoring, of course, the treatment group. How about their secondary outcomes?
So they found no significant difference between groups in median pain verbal numeric response scale scores or whether or not subjects received rescue antiemetics. Patients randomized to the isopropyl alcohol arm reported higher satisfaction scores.
Yeah, and their satisfaction scores? The median satisfaction score was 4 in the isopropyl alcohol arm versus 2 in the placebo arm. So again, this gave you an effect size of 2.
And Ken, there were no serious adverse events documented in either group.
All right, so that goes through the key results, Megan. Now it's time to talk a little nerdy to me, one of my favorite sections. And this paper, although small, is the first to evaluate this intervention in an emergency department population of patients presenting with nausea and vomiting related complaints.
So Ken, it's thought that isopropyl alcohol inhalation modulates neurotransmission at sites affecting the chemoreceptor trigger zone, and it represents an inexpensive and safe intervention for the treatment of nausea, which is a common presentation to the emergency department.
And so we're going to run through some of the limitations that we identified in this study, and I've got 5 listed here. And the first one I want to go through is the fact that this was a single center. This was done in San Antonio Military Medical Center. It serves active duty military personnel, retirees, and beneficiaries. The mean age was in the mid-30s and about 2/3 women. And this may or may not reflect your patient population presenting to your emergency department with nausea and vomiting.
Ken, the second limitation was that this was a convenience sample. These were not consecutive patients presenting with nausea and vomiting. This could introduce selection bias. The authors tried to minimize this potential bias by having study personnel available to recruit patients at varying times, including days, nights, and weekends, but they weren't there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
All right, and the third thing was blinding, and you mentioned that earlier when we were going through the quality checklist. Now, the investigators did try very, very hard to blind the subjects and the evaluators, and this included obscuring the two types of pads with brown opaque tape. And they also had the investigators hold the packages at arm's length if they were the ones opening it, so the investigators couldn't tell the smell. And then they also instructed the patients not to describe the pad scent to them. But I think despite these efforts, I think there probably was some unblinding here, because isopropyl alcohol, it does provide a stronger olfactory stimulation compared to normal saline, and it could have triggered a placebo effect. And I think that this placebo effect would have biased the study, and bias meaning move us away from the truth in a systematic way. I think this would have biased the study towards the treatment group. And the authors, I think they could have addressed this in the study design by having three groups. They could have had the isopropyl alcohol group, the placebo arm like they did with a normal saline pad, and then set up a sham group like peppermint oil. And the investigators could then inform the patients about the possibility of being randomized into a placebo group. And then after the study was concluded, the patients and investigators could have been asked which group they felt they were assigned. And this would have served two purposes. It would have helped minimize the olfactory component associated with the isopropyl alcohol and confirm if blinding was maintained through the study.
The fourth limitation had to do with patient-oriented outcomes. A decrease in nausea scores at 10 minutes is important, but there are other possible outcomes that should have been considered. It would have been nice to see how many patients in each group actually vomited after the intervention. Receiving an antiemetic and the number of doses are indirect markers for the patient-oriented outcome that really matters, such as, did you vomit? The primary outcome of nausea scores on a verbal rating scale is certainly a subjective measure, but measuring individual episodes of vomiting may have provided a more objective endpoint to measure. Additionally, the duration of this study period was relatively short, at 10 minutes. You wouldn't necessarily expect that the effectiveness of isopropyl alcohol nasal inhalation to last longer than 10 minutes, but further detail evaluating what happened to these patients later on in their emergency department stay might have been valuable to measure and describe. The onset of action for many of our commonly used antiemetics isn't immediate. Ondansetron takes around 30 minutes to have a notable effect on nausea, so if you have a patient who's acutely nauseous in front of you, the use of isopropyl alcohol via nasal inhalation might, in theory, represent a bridge therapy until other antiemetics can kick in. However, when prophylactic isopropyl alcohol was evaluated along with ondansetron versus ondansetron alone for postoperative nausea and vomiting, the study investigators weren't able to detect a benefit. We'll add that reference to the show notes on the ASGEM website.
All right, and the fifth and final thing that we wanted to mention under the limitations when we're talking nerdy was harm. And this study is too small and too short of a time period to give any strong statements about safety. It is a common mistake to assume that the lack of evidence of harm equals evidence of safety. Now, I'm not saying here that nasal inhalation of isopropyl alcohol is harmful, but the conclusion cannot be that it is safe. And I think the authors seem to acknowledge this limitation in their study. All right, let's comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the ESGEM's conclusions, Megan.
All right, we agree that isopropyl alcohol nasal inhalation appears to transiently decrease nausea compared with placebo.
How about a bottom line then?
For patients presenting to the emergency department with complaints of nausea and vomiting, a nasal inhalation of isopropyl alcohol is a quick and inexpensive way that may transiently improve symptoms without evidence of harm.
Well, you brought us a case. Can you resolve the case?
Sure. So while emergency department staff are settling your patient in his room, gowning him up, and establishing IV access, you open up an isopropyl alcohol swab and ask him to take a few deep inhalations. And after a period of about 10 minutes, the patient reports that he's a bit nauseous, but on a 0 to 10 scale, his score has decreased to a 4 from an 8 that he reported in triage.
And how about the clinical application of this study?
Okay, so can emergency department physicians may consider using isopropyl alcohol nasal inhalation as a very inexpensive intervention for transient relief of nausea symptoms in patients presenting to the emergency department?
So here's what I might say to a patient. It sounds like you're experiencing some pretty severe nausea and discomfort. I'd like you to take a few deep breaths. Thank you, Megan. Of this alcohol swab, there is some evidence it can help with nausea, and this will give us about 10 minutes to set up an IV and start you on some IV fluids and some other medications for your nausea. Now, if listeners want to learn more about this, there's some FOMED stuff out there. St. Emlyn's did a journal club on this called Can Alcohol Relieve Nausea?
And over on the Academic Life in Emergency Medicine website, there's a trick of the trade by a fellow EM pharmacist, Mark Culver, titled Isopropyl Alcohol Vapor Inhalation for Nausea and Vomiting.
And that brings us to the Keener contest. Last week's winner was Mario Pinoli from Lubbock, Texas. He knew that Motorola was the company credited for making the first commercially available handheld mobile phone. What's the Keener contest this week, Megan?
All right, so ingestions of isopropyl alcohol can be toxic in very high doses if left untreated, but they don't cause an anion gap acidosis. Which two alcohols can cause an anion gap metabolic acidosis and are much more toxic?
If you know the answer, then send an email to the sjam@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive that cool skeptical prize. Well, thank you, Megan, for being our superstar EM pharmacist guest skeptic once again.
No problem, Ken. Maybe next time we can talk about something other than the GI tract.
Sure, I'd be happy to. And if you have a paper that you want Megan and myself to put our skeptical eye upon, then just send it to the Hot or Not function on the SJAM website. And don't forget the Essentials of Emergency Medicine Fellowship. It's ongoing right now. You could win a trip to Las Vegas. So check out the SJAM website for details. The deadline is February 8th. But that's it for this week's episode of the SJAM. But we need that tagline, Megan.
Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next week. Ooh, that's right.